With the advent of COVID-19, pretty much everybody's a homeschooler these days. It's interesting to talk to people because some people love it. Everybody has good days and bad, and some days are better than others. And then some people are like, oh my goodness, I'm so grateful we have teachers. But I think everybody is learning a little bit more about their kids and about the role of education in society. So today we're going to talk a little bit about who is in charge of education and what some powerful organizations think is best for your child.
The Family Freedom Podcast, voices of family and freedom. Now here's your host, Wendy Hart.
I am joined today by Julie King. She's a mother of four. She currently serves on the Alpine School District Board in Utah, although she doesn't speak for the board. And she's got involvement and background in social work and has been a foster parent. So welcome, Julie.
Thanks for having me, Wendy. I appreciate it.
Give me just a real quick background. What have you done with social work and why are we talking about children and education?
Introduced me, a mother of four. I've also been a foster parent, which is a really challenging and unique situation. I highly recommend it to people who are interested in understanding trauma and things that kids go through. I have worked with survivors of domestic violence, and I've also largely worked with children who have suffered from neglect and child abuse, some of that physical, some of that sexual. Mm-hmm. And so I've had the opportunity to work with kids, particularly in the 0 to 12 age group. I have been privileged to participate in that and kind of be a bystander for some of the experiences that those children have had.
So basically your experience with kids comes from all walks of life. And would you say that you've had unique needs from an educational perspective?
Absolutely. I think every parent who has more than one child knows this, that every child has different needs, right? You discipline the oldest a certain way, and the second one comes along, and you thought you knew what you were doing, and it all gets thrown out the window. But particularly with kids who are facing trauma, they have different reactions. And some of the things in a school environment can actually be really helpful for kids who dealt with trauma as far as consistency and schedule and things like that. But school can also be a difficult place for children who suffer from trauma, as there are a lot of things that are not controlled. And so having options to be able to meet the needs of your child, whether your child is labeled gifted and talented, whether you have a child that has special needs and deals with disabilities and challenges, whether your child has dealt with trauma or any other slew of things that we kind of all come across, not to mention that we've seen an increase in things like anxiety and depression. And so every kid has different needs, and so the goal is to have as many options as we can, understanding that every child needs something a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. So that brings me to some of the things we've talked over the years about this idea of options, and currently you hear a lot of that, and one size doesn't fit all, and that's definitely true, but there's an article that came out just this week in one of the official publications of Harvard University, and they're convening a summit on homeschooling, which now we all are homeschoolers, right? But Harvard is pretty sure that they know how best to educate your child. The organizer of this summit is a professor from William & Mary Law School named James Dwyer, and he said, "The reason parent-child relationships exist is because the state confers legal parenthood." So you thought you were a parent because you gave birth to these children, or you adopted them, or you're fostering them. Professor Dwyer believes that it's the state that has given you, through its own beneficence, the ability to be a parent and to have any influence at all on your child.
So first off, and I know that you and I both know this, but just to clarify for any of your listeners, I know that we kind of jokingly refer to what's occurring as homeschooling, but you and I both know that this is not really homeschooling.
Right.
We are really in a dynamic where we are, you can call it crisis schooling or panic schooling.
Panic schooling.
We basically told teachers, hey, you have 2 days to figure out how to put everything you do in a classroom online. And parents, we need you to be support staff before that learning. And kids, by the way, here are six different platforms. You've got to go on and do passwords and logins and all kinds of fun stuff. And the reality is, this is not homeschooling.
Right.
You and I both know that that's not what homeschooling looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But it is. It has been a challenge, I think, for parents to kind of witness and be a more active kind of force in some situations, a forced participant in their child's education, and seeing some of the things that are really challenging and some of the things that are beneficial. And I will say that I do find it super interesting that Harvard is hosting this symposium, as well as one of their law professors, you know, recently spoke in an article this week in Harvard Magazine about the ills of homeschooling.
Right.
I find it interesting that this is the exact same university that sponsors Project Implicit that talks about implicit bias, whether it's towards race or gender or sexuality, and that they seem to have failed to recognize that there is a very specific implied bias in everything that is being stated by their own law professor.
Oh, that's rich. We could go into what the definition of irony is right about now, right? So, yes, and I agree with you, and I appreciate your qualifying that. And I've had teachers tell me that home online schooling is so much more difficult than actual in-classroom schooling as well. But
right.
So, yeah, tell me your perspective on this Harvard Summit. I'm sure you and I will not be invited.
So, you know, for me, when I was reading the article, there were a lot of assumptions that were made by the author as well as the law professor that was interviewed in the article. There were a lot of references to basically protecting the rights of children, and I felt there was an underlying tone of we have to protect children from their parents.
Right.
Now, having been a social worker and having worked with children who face abuse, there's no question that there is a specific population of children who are abused. But to claim that somehow children who are homeschooled are at a greater risk of abuse is absolutely false. And to promote that myth, I think, is extremely dangerous. Some of the things that the law professor stated where she was basically alluding to the fact that homeschool parents are uneducated, potentially illiterate.
Right.
We have an extremely high literacy rate in the United States to somehow imply that homeschool parents are illiterate, that they're dangerous, and also made the implication that the majority of homeschoolers are conservative Christians and made references to that they could potentially be racist and have negative views of a woman's worth.
Right.
And so my frustration was that it's a very, very narrow view of what homeschooling is, and it is absolutely mythical, the picture that is being painted. Are there horrific situations where people abuse their children? Absolutely, no question. Do some people sometimes use, like the situation in California, homeschooling as a way to keep their children hidden? Absolutely. But those are exceptions to the rule and definitely not the norm. We have very full, thriving, amazing homeschooling communities in Utah and across the nation. And I have had the privilege to have conversations and go to activities and work with some of these parents, and they're amazing. The sacrifices they're willing to make for their children is inspiring, and to paint those parents as being prejudiced and ignorant and as abusers, or that they're somehow illiterate, is really painful, really mm-hmm. painful, because those are people that I know and care about who love and care about their children. And the article, I felt, was really a piece of yellow journalism.
Yeah. Well, that was my impression as well. And it's always interesting, you know, we're always warned that when you don't know something about people, then they're kind of scary. And we're usually warned about that from places like Harvard, back to your Project Implicit Bias. But, you know, I actually would love to know how many homeschooling people are they inviting to this. The other thing that I found interesting was that the only piece of information that she referenced was they published, it was like a paper published in the Arizona Law Review where they get the 90% or some, by some estimates, are Christian, as if, you know, being Christian is somehow a horrible thing. When I just Googled it, I looked up what percentage of Americans are Christian, and in 2019, it's 65%. That's pretty draconian allegation to make against 65% of your fellow citizens. And then she pointed to the memoir Educated, which I know you've read, that was about the daughter of, they claim in here that she's the author is the daughter of Idaho survivalists who never sent their children to school. And yet the author was able to go to school, you know, go to college and get an education and write this book. And so obviously maybe her experience was not great. And maybe there were problems there, but is that really the best evidence you can have for your concerns with homeschooling, is an anecdotal autobiography?
Well, I think one of the challenges, I have read Educated. It's a great read. It pulls you in and you totally relate to the author. She's mm-hmm. obviously a talented writer. Members of the family have contested the accuracy of what is in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to say, right?
You're right.
Anytime that you have a circumstance where you have eyewitness testimony, there's always going to be a different version.
Mm-hmm.
And we've learned that eyewitness testimony can sometimes not be very reliable.
Right, right.
You know, we all have different experiences and memories, and sometimes those are skewed by our age and our circumstances and things like that. I am not saying that what she claims in the book, there's not some truth to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at times she does say, you know, my brothers remember this differently. There
right.
are times in the book that she does share that. But I also find it really fascinating that of the seven children in that family, three of them obtained PhDs, including the author.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they received as little education as they claimed, they were still kind of, you know, had enough of a love of learning that they sought to pursue degrees. And I don't know that we have those kind of statistics in any school dynamic, homeschooling, private schools, charter
right.
schools, public schools, that three out of seven kids get the PhD. So while there are, I'm just saying there may be other perspectives. And it always frustrates me when we bring up anomalies and use that as the rhetoric to define something.
Right.
And I do find it a little disappointing, more than a little, I find it disappointing that Harvard is having this symposium be by invitation only, because one of the things that they claim is that by homeschooling your children, it will lead to a decline in democracy.
Right.
That basically homeschoolers are not preparing their children to be part of a democratic society.
Right.
Part of being in a democratic society is being able to debate and understand the other side and sometimes be convinced of things. So once again, throwing in the irony of the Project Implicit, the dynamic that they're claiming that they're an institution that wants to promote open dialogue, and then they're saying, but we don't want to hear anything from anyone who has a different experience, is very troubling.
Right. Well, the irony for me on that one was that just this week we had the U.S. Secretary of Education come out and talk about, you know, the nation's report card, the NAEP test, and it said that 15% of eighth graders are proficient in history and 25% are proficient in civics. So
yes.
To nitpick that, you know, from her perspective, the homeschool community is failing in this endeavor. Well, the public school community, according to the NAEP anyway, is also failing in this endeavor. So this may be more of a cultural thing than it is the method by which you choose to educate your kids.
Once again, I feel too often in any kind of politics or questioning dynamic, we like to paint a caricature of the other side,
right?
It's easy to put them in a box of these kind of ridiculous extremist pieces rather than looking at people and who they actually are. I have friends all across the spectrum, as far as far right wing to far left wing, and everybody kind of in between. There are plenty of times where I don't agree with people with, you know, friends and relatives and people that I have great relationships with,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't mean that they're a bad person.
Right.
And I think we have to be very, very careful that we don't it just implies that we're not willing to look at people as flawed individuals. We all struggle. We all make mistakes. And to somehow vilify someone because they see the world from a different perspective,
right,
is the exact opposite of the diversity Harvard claims that they welcome in their school community.
Well, and when you talk about diversity, what I find interesting, this is a convoluted quote, but a former Utah Supreme Court Justice, Dallin H. Oaks, comments about how family autonomy assures the diversity that is characteristic of a free society. One of the things that we used to agree and promote as American culture was this idea that you can have a bunch of different ideas that are compatible with freedom, and that the way that you choose to educate your child doesn't have to imply how I choose to educate my child. And he said that freedom, that diversity, is what gives America that wonderful culture. And he goes on to say, I'll quote it here, much of the rich variety in American culture has been transmitted from generation to generation by determined parents who were acting against the best interest of their child as defined by official dogma. Just because we see it differently doesn't mean that that may not be exactly what an individual child needs.
Absolutely. And I think part of my struggle with the article was that the Harvard professor calls for a ban on homeschooling.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, the irony in there about talking about things, you know, that homeschoolers don't understand their role and can't contribute to a democracy. And yet what she was promoting is basically an intellectual totalitarian idea.
Yeah.
That the only way for a child to be educated, and educated properly, is in a public school. And we have phenomenal public schools.
We do.
But there are times where we can't meet the needs of every child.
Mm-hmm.
And if a parent finds that they're able to do that, whether that's through a charter school, a private school, or homeschooling, and they find a better fit, then I'm not sure why that is such a danger.
Mm-hmm.
That we can have diversity in everything else except education. It's a dangerous rhetoric, I believe, this kind of vilification of parents.
Right.
And I'm concerned about the route we're going when we have a university at this level making these kind of claims that are not based in fact and that are being promoted at a very high level of education.
Mm-hmm. And I know you and I, we've run into this because, like you said, every parent who has more than one child realizes that they're very different. 3% of kids in America supposedly are homeschooled. So we're talking a very, very small minority of the population. People's motivation for it, you know, she's claiming it's to remove their children from mainstream culture. But some of the people that I know that have homeschooled, they've done it because their children have been bullied or they are dealing with mental health issues and the structure of the school system has not been beneficial for them. So I think it's wonderful when our public schools are a great match. And obviously the fact that 3%, only 3% are being homeschooled says that by and large, we're doing a great job. But if your kid isn't getting the education that you feel that they need, what's the answer?
Well, and I think this goes back to, we a lot of times don't want to see parents as the experts. We want to defer to the people who have the alphabet soup behind their name. I know I've encountered this in the medical field,
mm-hmm.
and I've at times encountered it in the education field. And my response is a little bit snarky. I have had conversations where I've said, you may have a master's in education, but I have a PhD in my child.
I love it.
This is not to say that we don't have phenomenal educators who are looking at pedagogy and different ideas for how to make education better. We definitely need all of those individuals who are going to promote those pieces. But we cannot underestimate a parent's investment and understanding of what their individual child needs. And just like Let's say, for example, that you have high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You go into the doctor, and the doctor writes you a prescription for a medication, and the medication doesn't work. The doctor has now 10 other options that he can try in combination or individually to see if you react differently to different medications, because we know that it's not a one-size-fits-all. It doesn't work physically, and it doesn't work when we're talking educationally either. And so the idea is not that homeschooling is going to replace public schooling. I don't think, I've had friends jokingly ask me if their kids can join my homeschool, and I say, no, it's a private school you have to be born into. It's very selective. The point of homeschooling is not to convert other people to homeschooling. It's that you saw a need for your child that wasn't being met, and you looked for another option. And the goal is just to maintain those options. So if it's 3%, and I think the last statistics I looked at were roughly 3 million kids. If there are 3 million kids who are being homeschooled in the United States because, for various reasons, whether it's, like you said, medical conditions, special needs, bullying, whatever the dynamics are, every parent has the right to choose that for their child. It is now legal in all 50 states to homeschool your child. And for us to question that option because the needs of 3 million children are best met with their parents making those choices about education, that's a lot of children for us to choose, for us to say as a state, as professionals, we know better about what happens with your child in your home than you do. And I think that's a very dangerous path for us to step onto.
It is. Because again, these people in Harvard, do they know your child personally? How are they going to know the specificity of what that each of those individual children would need?
Right. And one of the things that's interesting, I'm actually part of a group of parents who homeschool that have chronic illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those parents have really serious chronic illnesses like cancer. Some of them have terminal diagnoses. And one of the things that's really interesting in watching some of those dynamics are homeschooling is not only done just for educational reasons. When you have a parent who may be dealing with a medical issue and may only have a year left to live, homeschooling may not be about a curriculum piece so much as building a relationship and developing memories with a parent.
Mm.
I know many parents who homeschool because of their child's own medical condition.
Right.
And so it provides them the freedom to seek out the medical treatment they need and be flexible in their school schedule, that it doesn't run in a 9-month, 8 to 3 p.m. every day, but it's more flexible based on treatments and surgeries and things like that. So the reality is that we're a country that was founded on diversity and free thought. And it would be a shame if we turned away from those foundations.
Wow. I don't know that we have any more to say about that. I mean, there's so much more I want to say, but that was so profound. I agree with you. I find it sad that we promote freedom and then we say, oh, except here. Because if it's working for
Absolutely.
Your kid, great. But what, I mean, and I had this conversation with somebody who was asking me about, why do you continue to fight to get rid of Common Core because it's been X number of years and this is the system and this is what's going on? Why do you continue to expend energy on something that this is just the way that it is? Why don't you just give in? And my response was, that's great if it's working for your kid. But if it's not working for my kid, I'm just supposed to say, well, that's the system. Is that not wrong for me to say, this system is failing my child, but I'm going to just give up and give in because that's the standard?
You're absolutely right. And I think it's one of the things that I was having an interesting discussion with one of my kids last night. We were discussing communism.
Mm-hmm.
Because as she was reading, she was like, well, this kind of sounds like this utopia of like there's no crosses and everybody's taken care of. And so we were having this great discussion about it and the pros and cons and, capitalism and poverty and all these other things. And one of the things that we were talking about is that in a communist society, what you do as an individual is driven by what benefits the state.
Yes.
And when we're talking about, a republic, a constitutional democracy, we are talking about we make things where we protect the rights of individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to make sure that we understand that distinction And sometimes people are going to make choices that you don't agree with.
Yeah.
Plenty of people parent differently from me, and I may not think they're making the right choice, but that's their choice to make. Mm-hmm. Now, and we also have laws in place for when a parent or another individual crosses a line and that becomes abusive or neglectful, we have those safeguards in place to make sure that we have things like the foster care system. As flawed as it is, it's there to serve as a safety net.
Right.
And the dynamic is that we should look for opportunities to improve systems and do better, not to say, I should have the right to tell you how to raise your child.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Julie. I really appreciate this. This has been fascinating. And I think the most important thing that we can do as parents is to preserve that freedom for all of the good parents, which are most of them, right? To have the freedom to look for what works best for their kid. Instead of protecting a system, we need to be looking at that individual child. And if it's if the parent's doing what's best for that individual child, then we need to stand up for that freedom to do that. Because I think as a society, we'll be better off.
I agree.
Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Wendy. I really appreciate it.
This has been the Family Freedom Podcast with Wendy Hart. Follow this podcast, share with your friends and neighbors, and add to the voices of family and freedom.